As part of my internship, I participate in a monthly conference call with 25 classmates serving their internships at various UU congregations across the country. On yesterday's call, after acknowledging the state of our union, meaning both our national political situation and the upheaval and discord in our denomination, one of the professors asked us each to share our greatest fear and our biggest hope. I'll ask you this morning, what is your greatest fear? What's your biggest hope? I'll tell you mine. My greatest fear is that Unitarian Universalism will let me down. I like what we say we stand for. I believe in it. But our history is checkered at best when it comes to truly including people who look like me, people of color, indigenous people. There have been commissions and working groups and task forces and committees, yet we just can't seem to get over the hump. I could stand here and tell you about all the resolutions and programs and reports that have been produced in the last 50 years alone, since that day in Boston when many blacks and people of color walked out of the 1969 General Assembly. And some kept walking right out of Unitarian Universalism. I could tell you about all the things, but I won't, because you already know that they haven't really worked. If they had, I wouldn't have needed to preach about how it feels to be a black UU. If they'd worked, we wouldn't still be talking about hiring practices that seem to keep people of color and indigenous people out of leadership positions in the highest levels of our denomination. If they'd worked, we wouldn't have been one of 684 congregations hosting a white supremacy teach-in last week. We wouldn't even need to have a white supremacy teach-in. My greatest fear is that it won't work this time either. That the belief in the inherent worth and dignity of every person is little more than a catchy tagline. My greatest fear is that my chosen faith, the one to which I'm dedicating my life, will let me down and break my heart. Last week, and the week before at Restoration, I saw some stuff, showed me a few things. It showed me that many of us are hurting, really, really hurting. We're fragile and raw and torn over these issues. We don't know what to do about racism and white supremacy. Some of us are confused and just don't know which way to turn. And some of us are going to avoid the discussion at all costs. I was disappointed when I learned that some people deliberately chose not to come last week, as if by staying away they could ignore the existence of the problem. And to them I say, I'm sorry, but this is a real thing. And it has been for many, many years, and it's not going to go away. Some simply objected to the use of the word supremacy, and this happened all over the country, not just here. That word is too charged. Yes, the word is charged, but these are charged times. Not saying the word doesn't mean the condition isn't real. I can call myself big-boned, or full-figured, or curvy all day long, but I know I'm fat. Calling it something else or avoiding the word fat doesn't change the fact that I am fat. Feedback has shown us that there were some across the country who stayed away because they were just afraid of how real the conversation might get. They don't want to talk about such unpleasant things or hurt anybody's feelings. By staying away, they could just come back when we're talking about something less controversial. It doesn't work that way either. Last Sunday, I sat right there and listened with an open mind and an open heart during our large reflection circle. And I read every one of the comment cards you turned in. Last week showed me that some people are really struggling to understand race, privilege, multiculturalism, and supremacy, and aren't quite there yet, wherever there is. I saw and I felt your pain. My heart ached for you. And that's why I'm not preaching to you today in the way that I normally would. Today, we're just going to take a few minutes to unpack what happened last week and figure out where we go next. Some of you responded on your cards with a very intellectualized recounting of the readings that you heard. Many of you shared how you felt. You shared what was in your heart. You said that you felt inadequate. Someone else wrote frustrated. One of you said you give money to anti-racism great groups because you don't know what else to do. Many of you were especially affected when the people of color left the sanctuary. Most of you referred to it as powerful. I got several calls and emails and messages. And I'll tell you, it felt that way to me too. I want to be a minister. I wouldn't be putting myself through 3 years of seminary and all that goes with it if I didn't want to be a minister. I want to lead a congregation in its spiritual development and its social justice work. It was hard for me to walk out of here and leave you behind, and it was important for me to do it. It was important for me to go. When I read the comments, you said you were embarrassed, and several of you used the words loss. One of you said you don't want to have, quote, all white services. When I read that particular comment, I couldn't help but think about my visit to First Unitarian in Baltimore, the site of probably the most famous sermon in Unitarian history, delivered by William Ellery Channing in 1819. I stood in the pulpit there to soak in the history, because we know I'm a history geek, we know that. And it was not unlike what I do here every Sunday when I see the plaque about Martin Luther King standing here. It was that same kind of experience for me in Baltimore. But something was just a little bit different. When Channing delivered his sermon, people who look like me weren't allowed to sit in the sanctuary. We had to sit up in a hidden chamber on the second floor. And I went there. We had to go up a narrow staircase to get to it. The space had two rows of really rough wooden benches. They weren't sanded smooth. It was rough. There was a narrow slit cut into the wall, kind of like a little narrow pass-through, that would allow the people there to see only the minister and nothing else. More importantly, it was there to protect the white people in the sanctuary from having to see the brown faces above. And I know that's a long time ago, but remember I told you we've been dealing with this issue for a long time. Someone else wanted to know what we did in the Dascom room and asked one of us afterward. Well, we were too big to fit in Dascom, so we didn't go there. We were in the dining room. And I don't know who made the comment because, you know, except for one person who signed their name, all of the comment cards were anonymous. But I found that one particular comment very, very interesting. Nothing we did was a secret, but why did they need to know? Another person expressed embarrassment over that because, quote, "We whites get this professional music director, trained choir, flautist, and piano. There's nothing in Dascom. Do the white people need all this support to do our work?" I don't know. I can't answer that question. But what I can tell you is that we had so much more than nothing. We had each other. We shared our stories, our hopes and our fears, and our faith, and our best wishes for this process. As much as we love USG, love Unitarian Universalism, and love each of you, this was still special and important. It was rich and meaningful. We got to know one another on a deeper level and made real human connections. It was pure love. Just because we showed love to one another, it doesn't mean that we don't still love you. I share experiences and history with my sister that are different from those I share with my boyfriend. Being with my sister doesn't mean I don't love my boyfriend. It doesn't mean I'm shutting him out of my life. And he doesn't even want to know about half the conversations I have with my sister. And vice versa. If they did, we'd have some serious insecurity issues to deal with. I get it in this context, though. Those feelings of insecurity were real. But as often as I say to you, it's okay, I'll say it one more time. It's okay. I hear you, and I acknowledge your insecurity. What we need to do is figure out where that's coming from and how to eliminate it. After the service, we had an open and honest conversation about what we'd just experienced. You shared your thoughts and your feelings. For the most part, you allowed others to question some of your actions and assumptions. You challenged yourselves and others to do better and to be better. And therein lies my biggest hope. There was a little girl in our people of color gathering. My hope is that we finally dismantle white supremacy, finally embrace multiculturalism, finally get it right this time for her sake. During our conversation yesterday, my friend and classmate Jess broke into song, as she usually does. Whitney Houston's The Greatest. Song starts with the line, "I believe the children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way." It's a little corny, but the sentiment is real. We have to get it right this time for Jess's son, for that little girl, and for all the kids in our USG community that we saw sitting here, for all the kids all over the world. Someone else asked me, what would healing look like? As a person of color, what do I want to see? As a minister, what do I want to see? I thought about it long and hard, and I still can't figure out the right words to articulate it. Maybe it's like there's an old Supreme Court case on obscenity, a First Amendment case, and the justice says, "I know it when I see it." Maybe it's like that. One of our denomination's historical anti-racism efforts back in the early 80s was called Journey Toward Wholeness. The program didn't survive, but the title describes my dream for us today, that we keep striving for justice, keep moving forward toward healing and wholeness. Today is Mother's Day, I'm not a mother myself, but I can say with 99.9% certainty that every mother wants something better for their child. They want him to have a good education, to be able to do what they love, to be able to have a nice home. Every mother wants her child to have every possible opportunity to thrive in this world, to be accepted for who they are, to be welcomed into and loved by their community, for them to feel safe physically and emotionally wherever they go. That's all any mother wants. That's what my mom wanted for me. And that's what I want for my nieces and nephews and cousins and for all of your children too. I want children of color to feel welcome in Unitarian Universalism and in the larger community today and when they grow up. I don't want them to have to suffer the 1,000 tiny cuts of racism I have or to feel the frustration of living in a society dominated by one particular culture. To be honest, I don't want that for myself anymore. I'm tired of it. Something's gotta give. It's time for real change. Back in July, during a visit here to Philly, Hillary Clinton spoke about racism and police violence. And she reminded us that ending the systemic racism that plagues our country will require contributions from all of us. But in the end, if we do that work, we will become a better nation. If we stand with each other now, we can build a future where no one is left out or left behind, and everyone can share in the promise of America, which is big enough for everyone, not to be reserved for a few. You've asked me what you can do. I don't pretend to have all the answers or to speak for every person of color, but here's what I suggest. First, think, really, really think about what happened here last week. If you weren't here, go back and watch it online. Where do you see white supremacy in your own life and here at USG? Where do you personally perpetuate systemic racism and white supremacy? Be honest with yourself. After you've done that, question your motives. Lots of people nationwide tell us about all the marches and the work they're already doing. If you're doing the work, are you doing it because you really believe in the inherent worth and dignity of every person and because you really want to serve others? Or are you doing it to make you feel good about yourself? Or even worse, out of guilt? Third, then, after you've done those two things, act. Get educated on white privilege, white supremacy, anti-racism. Learn about the details of the UUA hiring issue that's caused all of this to blow up and what's going on in our faith right now. Get involved. Speak up. Attend an ERC or white privilege meeting to find out what projects are happening. Learn how to be an ally. One of you stopped me and said, everybody needs to make a personal pledge to act and state it publicly so that they can be held accountable for what they promised to do. And I like that idea. I think it's something we should do. But don't panic. I'm not going to put you on the spot and ask you now to stand up and tell me what you're going to do. But I am going to ask you to raise your hand if you're willing to stay at the table. Raise your hand if you're willing to keep working to acknowledge and call out privilege and supremacy when you see them. Raise your hand if you're willing to keep working to end racism and oppression everywhere. I should see every hand raised right now. I said it last week, and I'll say it again. This is not about shaming anyone or making anyone feel guilty. This is about living our principles and our values. This is about finally getting it right and building that beloved community that we invoke oh so often. I know it's hard, and I know it's uncomfortable. It's hard and it's uncomfortable for me too. And I'm asking all of us to lean into it anyway. Do it for those who came before us and tried but fell short. Do it for the person sitting next to you, in front of you, or behind you right now. Today, on Mother's Day, tomorrow, and every day going forward, think like a mom. Do it for your children and their children and their children, whoever they are, wherever they are, all over the world. The journey toward wholeness and healing is a long one. We've been given another chance. Let's get it right this time. Our future depends on it. Thank you.